Okay, this week's parasha, Parashas Chukas, is the parasha, unfortunately, of war. War is not a good thing. What happens is it's parasha.
What's not good?
War. Melchama. War is not a good thing. By Yishlach. Okay, Rabbi, please look, give me a chance. Give me a chance. Rabbi, please.
Plenty of people make money
because
of that. I read through this very quickly, so go easy on me. By Yishlach. Yisrael Malachim El Sichon Melech Amari Leimar. Ebro V'Yartzecha. Let us pasture your land. What happened? They came out for war. The Jews were victorious. Unfortunately, in this war, one of the later wars, there was a captive taking. There was another war. All right, there are all different types of wars going on in this week's parashas. It's a something which is unfortunately an unpleasant thing about life, war. In David Lichtenstein's Sefer, headlines number 2, he has an outstanding, fantastic chapter called Killing a Neutralized Terrorist. Okay, this was all built upon an event that happened last year, and it was in the news recently as well. They had the trial took place recently. Regarding, I don't have all the names, regarding a terrible event, incident where two Arabs stabbed some soldiers, one or two soldiers. One of the terrorists was instantly shot dead, and another one was wounded. He was shot, he was wounded, and he was lying on the ground. And then a soldier, after everything was seemingly under control to some degree, never could be totally under control. The ambulance was taking away the soldier that was wounded. Another soldier who was on the scene went over to the second terrorist that was possibly still alive, and he shot him again, killed him. He shot him in the head to make sure that he's 100% dead. Okay, there's a lot more details. I don't even know the details. And this created, unfortunately, was videotaped by someone who was watching, and it went viral, and it became a big, big controversy in Eretz Yisrael. Why did this soldier kill the second terrorist when he was already neutralized? He was already lying in a state where he was no longer perceived a threat, which was not so clear because he was wearing a heavy jacket on a hot summer day, which only indicate that he had a suicide belt, a vest underneath it. So it's not, nothing is so simple. Okay, nothing is so simple. But it opened up a great storm of controversy, and
but that wasn't officially war.
Okay, let's discuss. Okay, now that case, we're not. Mashahoya Kvarhoya. Okay, so this opened up a topic of discussion in the halachic world. In the halachic world, what talk is the halacha? Now halacha is not necessarily what is practical, what will be accepted in the IDF or even in the United States, due to the fact that there is Chil Hashem and there is international pressure. So halacha will have to take that into consideration as well. But let's just talk about the concept, the general concept, the raw sources for this issue. What indeed is the halacha? If we were living in a Torah state and we were not under the scrutiny of the Umos HaOlam, theoretically, just bring out the Mefalpel and the Yesodus of Halacha, what would indeed be the Halacha in a situation just like this, where a person is a terrorist, a murderer, and he attempts to kill, to harm someone else, and he is neutralized? Are you allowed at that moment in time to kill him? If he, one moment ago, when he was making his attempt to harm someone, no question, he has a status of a roidef, and habo lehorgecha, hashkeim lehorga.
But if nitin la'atzilo, echad me'evar.
Oh, excellent. So there's a principle of nitin la'atzilo be echad me'evar. Now here is exactly what... Now, before we even go to that, let me just tell you, he really makes it very interesting by Rabbi David Lichtenstein, by quoting from this was debated with regard to Osama bin Laden. Osama bin Laden, he was killed. I read the interview. I read a few of the interviews. Oh, no, no. I just wanted to bring out the point. Of course. But I just want to bring out some ideas before we get into all the halachic ideas. Let me just turn to the correct page. Page 343. Osama bin Laden. I read the interviews. I always wondered, what were the orders? The orders to shoot to kill, or the orders to capture him alive? So this person, this fellow who killed him, became a celebrity. And he wrote a book. He wrote a book, and the book was approved by all the censors, and they interviewed him. Even the Jewish media interviewed him. And from the interview, it seems that the orders were not to kill. That's the sense that I got. The orders were, do what you have to do. If you can get him alive, get him alive. If you want to kill him, kill him. They basically gave them, that's the way I read the article, they basically gave the Navy SEALs
leeway, latitude.
Whatever you want to do. You feel there's a danger, kill him.
That he grabbed his gun or something.
It basically, the end was he didn't have a gun. The truth was he had nothing. That was the end. He really had nothing. He was totally harmless. But they didn't know that. But it's interesting is that the orders, maybe I'm wrong, it appears the orders were directed, better you kill him. Better kill him. But if you'll take him alive, it's okay also. We can deal with that as well. But better kill him. And it seems the attitude was, kill him. I mean, the orders are unclear, leaning to kill him, and the attitude of the Navy SEALs were, we're not taking him alive, we're going to kill him. Maybe if the circumstance presents themselves in such a way, then we'll take him alive. And they just went in one shot, they killed him. Okay, so the question was, you know, all these liberals out there in the world, how do you let to kill him? How do you let to kill Osama bin Laden just because he's a terrorist, just because he killed over 3,000 people and caused untold grief and agony and pain to the whole world? About to kill him? He's defenseless. Maybe he was an innocent bystander. So, all of the legal scholars got involved. Okay, the secular. Now we're going to halacha. So, Eric Holder. Is that his name, Eric Holder?
Yes.
So, he paskined with the authority of all of the legal expertise in United States of America that he is an enemy combatant. This is Eis Mulchama. One of the Yisrael Rishonim. You're Mechavim to one of the Rishonim. It's an Eis Mulchama. An Eis Mulchama, enemy combatant, there's no such thing as taking chances. You gotta kill him. Even if he's neutralized, even if he's in a massive where he is, you can never know. You never know what's gonna be. And when you're at war, this is his chiddush. You're at war, and when you're at war, the rules are different. The rules are different. You don't take any chances whatsoever.
Especially for soldiers that don't wear uniforms. If they mingle with civilians, there's a lesser degree.
So there are certain conventions in the secular world of how to engage in battle. And there are times... But even according to the standards of the Western world, because over here it's an army of the United States. They're coming into a foreign land. So they have to follow the rules, the conventions. And the conventions are, if it's not a time of war, then you have to be more careful. I don't know where it says. Okay, Rabbi Sai, please. I don't know where it says all of these rules and regulations, but it seems that there are such those conventions for prisoners. Whatever the rules of engagement are, it seems there are rules of engagement when you're at a time of war. And Eric Holder paskind, okay, pardon the terms, is that it's an Eis Mulchama. Memela, Osama is an enemy combatant no matter what state he is in, and therefore a shoot to kill is 100% legal beyond any shadow of a doubt. Not everyone agreed with him. There were some people from the BCC, the BBC, they quoted some other legal experts that are chilek on the United States and their legal expertise and said it's not an Eis Mulchama. They want him alive. Yeah, we all know. Okay. And they came to disagree. So you see over here that even among the Goyim, you see over here something very, very fascinating. Even among the Goyim, there is such a dilemma, what do you do with a terrorist who is neutralized? Do you have a right just to kill him on the spot? There's such a concept being called a time of war, and the rules of war are different than the rules when you are not a time of war. How do you define war? Can you define that we're still at war with Osama bin Laden? Is that really called a war? I mean, these are all big questions. Even among the goyim, they grapple with. Now, what does halacha say about all of this? So here, the Chemi mentioned, we have over here a very big problem. We have over here two halachas which contradict one another, and it's a very difficult thing to resolve these two halachas. And all of the biggest gedolei Yisrael, they grapple with this, and that is the law of a baba machteres versus the law of a roidev. What is a baba machteres? A person breaks into your home. I'm at home. It's the middle of the night. A person tunnels his way into the home. The halacha is you're allowed to kill him. And when and it's clear in the Rambam, a baba machteres, there is no such halacha to try to wound him. If you can kill him, you can stop him by the echad me'evarov. Why should I kill him? I'll shoot him in the leg. If I'll aim to shoot him in the leg, I won't kill him and I will neutralize him. Do we apply such a principle with regard to the law of Abba Machteres? Absolutely not. No one disagrees with this principle.
Well,
person,
I say even by Rode, if you're the victim, you're allowed to kill him. There's no
if you're the victim, you're allowed to kill him. They say, I can say that. Okay, I don't know that. I know that.
The police also, if you're going to shoot, you have to shoot the kill.
Oh, that's what they say. They say, practically speaking, I want to tell some decks, but they say, practically speaking, you shoot to kill. Because if you're going to start to aim for the leg, for an Aver, She'en HaNeshama Tuliyabo, you'll probably miss, and you'll be killed.
Right,
you'll be killed.
Well,
so you shoot to kill.
Right.
But let's assume, let's speak, be more at least theoretical, because an enemy combatant that's neutralized to some degree is, you're able to prevent it by Achas Me'evar. So that's more of a real application when it's no longer the time of Sakana Mamash. Let's take a step back. There's such a principle of Habol Lahar, a person that's coming to kill you, or is coming to kill someone else. If you're able to stop him by injuring him and not killing him, you have an obligation to do so. You're not allowed to take his life. You have to stop him by some other means. However, in this very unique case of when a person's breaking into your home, habob machteres, he goes through the effort of coming into your property. A roidev doesn't mean he's in your property. It means he's out in the street. He's either coming to kill you, coming to kill someone else. So then, you're not allowed to kill him so quickly. You have to make a proper assessment. If you can make an assessment where the person can be stopped by not killing him, you have to do that. But when a person breaks into your house, that's a lot of chutzpah. That's quite a bit of chutzpah to come into private property in the middle of the night. And the person, the chazal, he knows entering private property to steal may mean that he will be killed. He will be caught and be killed. So therefore, from the very beginning, he's prepared to kill you. And at any means, and Chazal relaxed any restriction. You don't have to make any assessment if you can prevent him by hurting, by echad neivarav, disabling him. You're allowed to shoot to kill 100%. Even if you don't know. You don't know what he has.
You don't know what he has.
You don't know. Habah, you're allowed to shoot to kill. So that's a very big question. When you deal with a terrorist, Bizman Hazeh, Eretz Yisrael, anywhere for that matter, does it have the status Habah b'machteres, or has it of a roidev? What exactly is the distinction between a roidev, where you have to stand back, make an assessment, what exactly is his threat, versus a baba machteres, where you don't make any assessment whatsoever, any possible threat you're allowed to remove by killing the perpetrator. Now there's another very important halacha, and that is, what happens if the baba machteres, he comes into your house, he's tunneling in, and you're waiting on the other side with your gun to kill him, and before he comes to you, the tunnel collapses. They have this with the Palestinians. They go through the tunnels and the tunnels collapse. Are you obligated to save him? Okay, this is a whole new level. Am I obligated to go and dig out the... Now, he's certainly, at this point in time, it would appear that he's neutralized. He's not a threat because the tunnel collapsed upon him. He's injured. He's unconscious. He's not able to move. He needs me to remove all of the stones in order to save his life. Halach is no. Halach is absolutely not. Habah b'machteres, if the machteres collapses, you have absolutely no obligation to save him, let him die right then and there. Now that question is a discussion among the Rishonim. This is an unbelievable thing. Some say that's only true when it's Shabbos. Because Shabbos would mean you would have to be it's very bizarre. I don't know what this means. You would have to be mechallel Shabbos. You would have to be mechallel Shabbos to save him. But if it's not Shabbos, when there's no chil Shabbos for you, so then you mechuyif to save him. Some Rishonim make that distinction. Some Rishonim say Shabbos mandikar shemay. Where did the Gemara ever make a distinction of saving a person that's bavim machteris when the tunnel collapses? Whether it's Shabbos, not Shabbos. Where do you get this distinction? It doesn't make a difference. He's coming to kill you. The tunnel collapses upon him. Good for him. Let him go and let him die over there. What? The only exception is a father. Right. In Echanami, so that we're not dealing with that exception.
You see an accident on the street. What in a Shabbos.
Know, that's your father.
And you know
that's not a Bava Machteres.
Wait a minute. You know the driver is not Jewish, it's driver.
So what?
Are you allowed to call that someone?
Yes, you are. I believe so, you are.
Because I heard someone say you shouldn't call.
No, I believe so, you are. You're
because you're two things, because
no.
You're making Makala Shabbos.
No, it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. You have to even for a guy. If you witness an emergency, if you don't do it, you're putting everyone in jeopardy. If you don't save a guy, if you see a guy, can you imagine, see a guy gets an accident, you don't, I'm Jewish, Shabbos, I can't call 911. So you know the Chil Hashem? You know the Chil Hashem that will cause?
Rabbi, I have a practical story. A friend of mine was in Laos, in Vietnam, Laos.
Yeah.
The captain. He said, well, they captured the enemy, and they didn't have a provision to keep them as prisoners. There's no, they didn't have the facilities. They would kill them.
Yeah.
They would kill them. You don't think about it, but they didn't have facilities.
War.
They had to go on to keep continue to fight. They would just shoot them.
Why if you're not sure it's your father?
I'm imagining you would be mechuyif to do so. So here's a question. The question over here is, why? Why are you not mechuyif? That this here will be the very big nafkamina. Why is it? Now let's try to compare the case. Compare the case of Habab Machteres when the tunnel collapses. Because when the tunnel collapses, pretty much he's neutralized. The Rotzeach is neutralized. Now the question is, am I mechuyif to save his life? So many Rishonim say you're not mechuyif to save his life. Now that the tunnel has collapsed, so be it. Maybe from there we can extrapolate that a terrorist who has been neutralized, he's like he's Bob Machteres, and the building collapsed upon him, he's now down, he's now been wounded, I'm allowed to let him die. How am I allowed? The one thing to let him die is don't call an ambulance. Okay, or delay medical treatment, which itself will also get very big controversy. Should Zaka treat, and should the first responders, should they treat them, not treat them, how do they go about doing so, whatever it is. But what do you do in this case? So here is the question.
Might be different. What? Question of active or passive.
Oh, so that's a question. Now, one of the ways to explain this is that when he comes to kill the person, when he is coming to kill another human being, he is a rotzeach. At that moment in time, he's a dead man. He's a dead man. He's chayiv misa. When the building collapses upon him, his punishment is being carried out.
Right.
So that's it. You have nothing. There's nothing more. You don't have to stop it.
Not coming to kill. They just burglarize. No weapons.
No, that's what the Gemara says. The Gemara says. The reality is this does not change. And today, I don't know how the secular law looks at this. A person who breaks into your house is going to kill you. Is going to kill you.
You stand up against
it. Stand your ground.
In the United States, I do not know what the law is. In the United States, if a burglar comes into your house in the middle of the night.
It depends if you have a liberal judge or a conservative.
What?
In the house.
No. Yeah, that's the law. If someone, Rahman Islam, breaks into your house and you kill him.
Someone shot a guy running away from his house.
But in the house, I don't know, it's not so similar. There was once a case, I remember when I was in elementary school, there was a case where a burglar came into his house, so he knew. So he basically set up a trap that he break open, come into the door, he was killed.
Exactly.
And he was killed. And they sued, the family sued for murder. And they won.
He booby trapped the window and shot the guy.
And the guy was killed, and the person who did this was put in jail for killing a robber, for booby trapping his own home. It's very strange. What do you want from me? The guy comes to my house, coming to kill me. I go and I kill him. Yeah, I have to go to jail for killing him. What kind of law is that? But that's what happened. I don't remember the details. Let's go back. This person over here, he's coming to kill. Therefore, at that moment in time, he's chayiv misa. If HaKadosh Baruch Hu goes about and brings about, starts his death by causing the tunnel to collapse upon him, this is an act of justice. And therefore, you're not mechayiv to do anything to him. Because at that moment in time, when the building, when the tunnel collapsed upon him, he was chayiv misa. If I would have killed him at that moment in time, I would do nothing wrong. I'm allowed to. If I would shoot him and it would take him 10 minutes to bleed out, that's fine. Because a ball or argo.
That's why you say kill him.
He's already dead.
If he does damage in the course of the burglary.
That would not necessarily be the equivalent to the case over here that we're discussing where a terrorist has been neutralized and now I want to come over to him, I want to shoot him, I want to kill him, I want to kill him dead. That's how some Rishonim understand the halach of the Gemara, that if the tunnel collapses, you're allowed to let him die because he's a dead man at the moment when he breaks in and the punishment has begun, the execution of his punishment has begun, the carrying out of justice has begun. So be it. Let it be. Let it just remain the way it is. However, other Rishonim say it's an entirely different reason and that has a lot of application. Because if you're going to save him, if you're going to remove all of the rubble and save him, who knows, he may go and kill you 5 minutes later. Or he may go kill you in the future. If this person already has shown that he is willing to kill you, he's a roidev, and he comes into your home, habo lehargucha, he's coming to kill you, and the tunnel collapses, what are you going to save him? He's already proven what his intent is.
It's like David Amela.
What?
It's
worse than it's worse than Ben Saramara because he did something. He bamished the Baisa with Sicha. Ben Saramara, what did he do? He just ate some meat. He stole some money, ate some meat, he drank some wine. He didn't do anything that's mamish.
That's a unique case.
Here he actually broke into the home. This is an expression, I'm coming to kill you. A person who has shown that he's willing to kill someone is a very dangerous person. Therefore, if the tunnel collapses, don't save him, because why should you save him? So he can kill you another day? This is grounds. These grounds open up. And what you want to say, it's passive. It's passive versus being active. That's not necessarily a distinction. Being passive and being active when it comes to saving someone's life, there's a very fine line between being passive and being active when it comes to human life. The bottom line over here is this person has shown his true colors, and therefore you have a right to go and allow him to die. That would, someone extend from that a terrorist who has shown his true intent, you're allowed to kill him on the spot. On the spot, based upon this Gemara, Mamash extracting from the halacha of Abba Machteres. What?
How much later? What's the period of time?
It would seem you could extend this for a very long time.
So you can go into the hospital and pull his blood.
It's not going to hold up international law, I guarantee you that. But
you can go out and pull his blood.
Look, he points out over here is that for Gilad Shalit, 1,276
prisoners
were freed. Six of those went on, because of those six, for those 1,027 prisoners who were released, there are six Jews who are dead today. Six acts of murder were committed as a consequence of releasing these 1,027 terrorists. So we saved one person. No one's saved one person. In exchange, years later, for six people.
There must be 200 of them who came back.
What?
There must be 200 of them who came back and who were killed before they were able to kill Jews.
The three people who have blood on their hands. Six of them have blood on their hands, and that's it. Some of them have blood on their hands for killing six, and one of them who was released was responsible for financing the three boys that were kidnapped and murdered.
Tomorrow is the yard site when they found them.
So the one was responsible for financing. So you see over here that once a terrorist has shown his true color, you see how true it is. How Baba Machteres. Not because he's a gavra, he's a dead man. He has shown his true intent. Once you have revealed what your true intent is, that's it. Your life is not worth anything, and you can be killed. That's why the tunnel collapses, let the person die. And and there's a very small distinction between letting a person die versus a terrorist that has been neutralized, that's lying right in front of you. So to be actively go killing someone is say that there's really no difference. You've shown your true intent, and therefore you're allowed to be killed at that moment in time.
It's a chiddush. What? Should you exchange the?
Right. That's another question. That's another topic of discussion. That's a whole different topic of discussion. Pidyon shvuyim, a redeeming.
That question. You gain custody when you are in somebody in your custody. You're responsible when that line.
When starts, that comes to an end.
Yeah, when he's a terrorist.
That's the big question. Where do you draw the line? Once the person already has been neutralized to such a degree. Where he's in custody, he's in jail, he's now going to become a bargaining chip for other prisoner exchange. I don't know. These are all very tough questions. Let's just go to another idea. The other idea the person we want to bring a source from is the case of, we mentioned this in the morning, in the beginning, of Antoninus. Antoninus was one of the Caesars of Rome. He was a very good friend of Rabbeinu HaKadosh. He would travel secretly to Rabbeinu HaKadosh in a tunnel in order to learn Torah by Rabbeinu HaKadosh. He ultimately was Megaya. When it says in the Gemara that when he traveled to Rabbeinu HaKadosh, he needed the assistance of some of his servants. At the end of each trip, he killed the servants, the Pharisee of Gemara. He murdered the servants. Why did he murder the servants? Because maybe one of these servants would reveal the secret. He would leak information to CNN what was really going on, and it would be scandalous among the Romans who hated the Jews to know that their Caesar is going to learn Torah by Rabbeinu HaKadosh. So, but who knows? Maybe they won't leak the information. Maybe he can trust them. So it's a suffix roided. A suffix roided. He viewed these servants. They'll kill him. Once the government, the people in Rome found out that Rabbeinu, that Antoninus is learning Torah with Rabbeinu HaKadosh, they will instantly kill Antoninus. So he viewed these servants who knew about his passage through this tunnel as a sofek roidef. And he killed them. And the Gemara from the Rabbeinu, and based upon this, Rabbi Yehuda HaChassid said that if you ever have, he has an example of a sofek, you're allowed to kill a sofek roidef. You have a person who is a sofik, a witness. He brings on a case where if Jews, they do something, they have to do something in order to protect themselves, and there are witnesses witnessing what has happened. Okay, you have someone filming the event. It's a shocking thing. Rabbi Yehuda HaChassid says, you're allowed to kill the witnesses. Hafle v'fela. Because the witnesses will go report the information to the authorities, and that will bring about bloodshed among the Jewish people, even though maybe they won't, only a Sofik. A Sofik Roidef is allowed to be put to death. This is the incredible Chiddush of Yehuda HaChassid, based upon the Gemara with regard to Antoninus. So the modern day Poskim, they deal, is this really true? Can we really rely upon this halacha l'maaseh? First of all, it's a goy. First of all, we didn't know he was a goy. And the life of a goy, now this is a very important principle. A goy has no chiyuv to give up his life not to commit murder. This is a very important yisod to be aware of, and that changes all the whole dynamics of life and death by a goy. A Jew is not allowed to commit murder on pain of death. If one guy says to another guy, if you don't go murder so-and-so, I'm going to kill you. So why can't you argue? You could argue, and therefore, I'm going to die, I'm allowed to do an aveira to save my own life. So if he tells me to kill so-and-so, I'll kill so-and-so to save my own life. You're not allowed to do that. Machozis, the damcha, why is your blood redder than his blood? You're not allowed to do that. A guy is not mechuyav in this halacha. If a guy is presented with a choice of killing someone else or saving his own life, according to halacha, a guy is allowed to save his own life. Isn't that amazing? A guy, halacha and shaman, they have no tainus. They put a gun to his head, either kill him or I'll kill you. So he's allowed to kill the other person. I did nothing wrong. I'm allowed to save my own life. I'm allowed to preserve my own life. A guy is allowed to say my chazis with regard to someone else. So what do you see from that? From our perspective, a guy is very dangerous. That halacha, the fact that a guy is allowed to kill someone else to save his own life, makes a guy in our eyes a very dangerous person. They'll do anything for self-preservation. Yeah.
Antoninus was a guy.
Exactly. So Antoninos, maybe it's not a riot. The reason why Antoninos was allowed to kill his servants is because the servants would preserve their life no matter what. They would preserve their life no matter what because a goy is allowed to preserve their life. So therefore they're a real, real threat. The degree of suffolk roidev by a goy is much, much greater than a suffolk roidev by a Jew. Now the case that we're discussing here is that we're a terrorist, Palestinians, we're not dealing only with Jews, but when we're dealing with a goy, then maybe a goy will do anything to save himself. Therefore, he'll even kill someone else. Therefore, the din of a suffolk roidev by a goy is different than a din suffolk roidev by a Jew. Because a Jew knows you have to give up your life to save someone else's life. That's a consideration in how we deal with a suffolk roidev by a Jew. But when you're dealing with a suffolk roidev by a goy, then you see Antoninos, you don't play games. You right away have to kill the person. So here someone argued that al pi halacha, if you have a terrorist who has attempted to murder another human being, a Jew, and now you have him in a state where he's neutralized and you have an opportunity to kill him, kill him. If you're not going to kill him now, what's he going to do? He's going to go to jail, he'll be released in the prisoner exchange, he'll go back and for sure kill someone and go try to kill more Jews. He's a roidev. He's proven himself to be a roidev. A suffolk roidev, according to halacha, is allowed to be killed. Now the problem is not all of the poskim and the gedolim hold the Rabbi Yehuda HaChassid, and they hold the Shah and the Gemara. Moshe Feinstein says something very, very shocking. He says, you can't bring a raya from the case of I think it's Rabbi Moshe Feinstein, maybe it's Rabbi Shlomo Zalman Auerbach, or Rabbi Moshe Feinstein, one of them says, you can't bring a raya. The people that Antoninos killed were people who were anyway chayev misa. Those that anyway in the Gemara. It says that he used servants that were not good servants. He took servants he knew were rebels. He knew he took people out of the jail. He knew they gave him a job. And after the job, he killed them because anyway they were chayev misa. So it's not a raya dealing with a suffolk roidev. Enoch and Ami, a human being, even a goy, the value of a goy, you cannot play God. You cannot, like a Ben Sorumara, you don't know what's going to be in the future. For this moment in time, he's neutralized, he's not a threat. You have no right to take into consideration what's going to be in the future. Now, let me just say some other other ideas which relate to this. And that is Yaakov, the other so we said is a time of war. If you're holding at a time of war, the rules are dramatically, drastically reduced. If you hold that the matzav in Eretz Yisrael is an ace mulchama, it's a time of war, a terrorist who comes and tries to attack, we look at this situation in a time of war, then the rules are very different. The rules of eliminating a terrorist, even when he is neutralized, are dramatically reduced. You're allowed to achieve, even kill innocent civilians in order to achieve a military objective. The Rambam talks about this. The Rambam talks about situations where if you have to achieve certain roles, like let's talk about dropping the atomic bomb in Hiroshima. Okay, Truman. Okay, so he dropped the atomic bomb in Hiroshima. How many people did he kill? How many people were killed? Innocent. How many?
100,000
innocent people. Did it achieve a goal of putting an end to the war?
Yes.
Absolutely. Are you allowed to do it? Was he, according to halacha, if there would be, he would call up or Moshe Feinstein, call up, I don't know what they would say, are you allowed to do it? From the Rambam, it's mash, innocent civilians to achieve a goal in war. The Pashas is yes. That's
this is what it seems, that's
Amalek, that's Amalek, a Canaan. This is what it seems to say. Everything I'm telling you, of course, is I don't know anything.
The assessment was that if they continue the war, they could lose another million.
Exactly. So it's a military objective. It's a military objective to kill innocent civilians. The way he presents it here, I could be totally wrong, but the way the impression I got is that according to the Rambam, indeed this is permitted. It is permitted to kill even innocent civilians at a time of war to achieve a valid objective. It's a very, very frightening, shocking thing. And according to that principle, killing a terrorist, if you view a terrorist attack as an act of war, and now what are we going to do with this guy? We're going to send him to the hospital, and all the cameras are going to come and take pictures, and then he's going to be a pawn in a prisoner exchange, and he'll be released one day, and then he'll go on and become a celebrity and a politician and go kill more people.
Osama bin Laden, if he was caught, it would have been a trial, it would have been publicity, and he would have
You would have more followers.
Look at Saddam. Look at the disaster. Wouldn't it have been so much easier if Saddam would have been killed in that pit when they found him? Yeah. It would have been hindsight, right? Everything is 20/20 hindsight. If they would have done it the right way, if they would have played their cards right, maybe they could have used to their advantage. Okay, but hindsight is 20/20. You don't know what it would have been. But there is such a principle that to achieve a military objective, you're allowed to kill even innocent civilians. Al achas kama v'kama. There's a very great achievement of eliminating a terrorist who tried to kill another Jew. If you can drop a bomb, according to halacha, where he presents it was mutter. Al pi halacha, what he did, it's a chiddush to say such a thing, right? To drop the atomic bomb on Hiroshima and kill 100,000 people in order to put an end to the war and save a lot of...
Nowadays, I don't think that would be legal.
Today, you're right. So you're right. We're talking halacha, right? You have to listen. The bottom line is, everything over here is not practical halacha l'maisa because of course it would be an outrage. The sinas, the hatred for Klal Yisrael is so great. If you have over here a terrorist that's in a coma. And you don't go do bend backwards to go and resuscitate him, revive him, so there'll be an international outrage against Israel. So it's not practical today. Practically today, the soldiers are taught, especially in the aftermath of this event, is to be super, super careful. If the terrorist is neutralized, don't touch him. Don't touch him, be good to him, and whatever will be. Because unfortunately, we're living in a world where there's a lot of hatred.
35 years ago in Borough Park, there was a guy walked into a bodega, and the guy's daughter was a little 3-year-old girl was there, and he said, "Give me your money," and he shot the girl cold blood. A day later, they knew who the guy was. The father took a gun, walked to the street, found the murderer, and shot him dead. The grand jury refused to indict the father.
Good for them.
They let him out free.
Good for them.
Today...
impossible. All right, just two Marimo Kaimais. There's a long topic. Avram Avinu, when he went to save Lot, he killed a lot of innocent people, it says. Malki, Tzedek Melech, Shalom Hoitzi, Lechem V'yayin, why? To show Avram, I'm not upset at you. Even though you wiped out my whole family, you wiped out all my whole community in war, it was time of war, he Hoitzi, Lechem V'yayin. That's what it says in Hazar. So you see, Avram Avinu went, he killed innocent people in war. He knew after they were neutralized. Another example is Reuven and Shimon Shechem. They wiped out the whole city of Shechem. How are they allowed to do that? And Yaakov Avinu, he gives them Mussar.
Gemara said because they were still holding Dina.
They're holding Dina. And Yaakov Avinu gives them Mussar. And the third example, he gives is David. Hashem told David, you can't build the Beis HaMikdash because he killed innocent people. What do you mean? It was war. So was he allowed? Was he not allowed? So you see a difference. You're allowed. What you did in war was okay. You went, you wiped out cities.
We still hold it against you.
So you see over here, there's a very fine line. It's a very complex matter. There are a lot of sources. We just browse through some of them, but there are a lot more sources, and the topic is a hot topic.